Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Governor Tony Evers introduces his plan to address an uptick in violence. Plus, the GOP leader of the assembly rejects calls to decertify the 2020 election, but reveals he still believes there's proof of widespread voter fraud. And the city of Milwaukee is looking to offer an alternative to drop boxes after a judge banned them for April's general election. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for March 18th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., let's start off this week with Governor Evers introducing a crime package. Mm-hmm. Now, this comes in addition to other funds that he already administered in about a round of $45 million back in October. So this is kind of a new incentive package focusing on violent crime. We have a breakdown of where the numbers go. About $50 million will go towards community safety. $19 million will go towards local and tribal law enforcement agencies. $3 million just to Milwaukee Police Department, and $14 million to extend hours at the Milwaukee County Courthouse to resolve outstanding cases to reduce the backlog. Now, we know Milwaukee has been, you know, the centerpiece of a lot of an uptick of crime. We also had the Waukesha incident. So crime in general and having a plan to address it has been a big focus of the 2020 campaign for candidates that are running and that will be on the ballot. Before we dive into the details of this, let's hear from Governor Ever making his pitch for this crime package.
I'm announcing that we're investing more than $50 million in grants to support local and tribal public safety agencies, to bolster crime prevention strategies, and to help alleviate the pandemic-related backlog of criminal cases in Milwaukee County and across Wisconsin. At the end of the day, whether it's investing in mental health support and diversion, to getting folks fair and speedy trial, to bolstering reentry program, we're going to follow the science and use evidence-based, data-driven strategies to build a safer, fairer Wisconsin for everyone. The bottom line is we've delivered where the state legislature has failed.
Bloomington is still a great college town, by the way.
So, JR, this kind of comes at a time a few weeks after Governor Evers faced a lot of criticism for saying that he didn't have time to meet with the family of a homicide victim from Milwaukee. So this comes right after that. But like I mentioned before, a lot of candidates are trying to make, you know, crime a big topic and centerpiece of their campaigns.
It comes right before he's going to veto a series of crime bills that Republicans sent him like last several weeks, right? So there were all kinds of bills that wanted to use ARPA money, federal COVID money that's at Evers' disposal to pay for various anti-crime initiatives, police recruiting, all those things. I don't think Evers is going to sign many of those because they're all on party line votes out of the legislature, the ones that got votes. So he is basically trying to put himself in a position to say, I did these things on crime, when there are going to be videos or ads running this fall of Kenosha burning and people saying Tony Evers not only let Kenosha burn, but inflame tensions. So this is a little preemptive move on those things. By the way, speaking of other people in crime, Kevin Nicholson has a 5-point plan out this week, his own crime plan. Yes, it's going to be a huge issue this fall. They're all going to talk about it. Evers has to find a way to maneuver that minefield because people are going to say, well, what about 2020? What was going on during the protests and defund the police and all this stuff? The Democratic talking point now is Republicans want to defund the police because they are not funding shared revenue with state aid going to local governments. Evers is criticizing them for taking the things out of his budget to increase shared revenue. This is going to be the Evers answer to that issue going forward.
And our next topic, we have a lot to unpack here with the 2020 election. Yes, we're in 2022. A lot of Republicans still talking about 2020. The big headline this week is that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss reiterated again there is no legal avenue to decertify the election after he held a private meeting with advocates who firmly believe it's possible. Now, Voss has repeatedly said there is no pathway to do so with decertification, but he did reveal when I asked him if he believes there's widespread voter fraud, and he said yes, despite numerous reviews, even the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau finding no evidence of that claim. Let's take a listen to what Voss had to say and the criticism that he heard, or the criticism from Governor Evers kind of slamming Voss for trying to have it both ways.
Do you think there was widespread fraud or just a few instances?
I think there was widespread fraud. I believe there were problems with the election. I believe that's why we have passed 17 different bills. We have the Gabelman investigation that I know is showing many of the issues that are there. The problem gets down to what's the remedy. The Democrats still have not yet admitted that there were any issues with the 2020 election, and every investigation has shown there were many. So I think we should focus on the solution, which is a new governor, a new attorney general, the ability to have, as we move forward, solutions that can actually become law, as opposed to ideas, which, again, are totally untested, never been done in the history of our country. We can't have a legislature decertify an election.
He's saying there was widespread fraud, and by golly, I'd love to do something about that, but I can't. That's not leadership. And I'd say Speaker Voss tries to remind me regularly that he's a leader. When they're saying that and they know it's not true and it has not been proven to be true, they're causing that to happen. That's just the wrong thing to do, and I just have to call him out on that. I think he's one of the smartest people I've ever met, and I think this is about one of the dumbest things he's ever said.
So Voss is also trying to urge these decertification supporters to focus their energy in November, right? Mm-hmm. Let's focus on winning and electing Republicans up and down the ballot. If you want election changes, elect a Republican governor, a Republican attorney general. His comments also come on the same day party leaders met in Plover, where the meeting, there was a rally in Plover, I should say, to clarify, across the street in Stevens Point at a convention center. Speaker Voss, Leader Lemahue, and members of county Republican parties kind of held this meeting to talk about questions about the election, decertification. Across the street, a lot of people saying, toss Voss, reject Voss. Mm-hmm. So here we are with this back and forth of, you know, people calling for him to do more, saying he's not going to do more, but now all of a sudden is saying that he believes there's widespread voter fraud. So he's a little all over the place.
So the question I got from people I talked to this week was, how do you get people to look forward when you keep them in the field to look backward, right? I mean, Robin Voss is saying now there's widespread fraud in the election, which is interesting because you point out LAB, which he helped authorize that review of the 2020 election, found no widespread fraud, but administrative issues. So if Robin wants the focus to be on 2022, what's he doing moving the goalposts of where he stands on what happened in 2020 to now say widespread fraud? Now I'm saying Gabelman's investigation has uncovered some things. You've all looked at what Gabelman's uncovered. A lot of it's not new. Oh, by the way, a lot of it's disputed. For example, the nursing home turnout. The city clerk in Milwaukee said, oh, look, here are 33 nursing homes in the city of Milwaukee. Turnout on election day, registered voters, there's not 100% turnout in any of these homes in Milwaukee, the city. Now, Gabelman's report talked about Milwaukee County, right? So you don't know what the overlap was. He didn't detail things in his report to know which homes he looked at. That said, it's been disputed. And then you follow up from Robin Voss saying there's widespread fraud, we can't do anything about it, to Donald Trump jumping in with a comment which reinforces that it's never going to be enough, Emily. No matter what Robin Voss does with this, he's never going to placate certain people unless President Trump's back in office, the results are decertified, and there are people in prison who did certain things. Those things are not going to happen. So what do you get out of this?
Right. And I do want to bring up, too, from Democrats, or I think it was a few weeks ago, too, they sent a letter to Speaker Voss saying you need to, you know, speak more openly against voter fraud. And now here he is saying, well, I believe there is proof of it, despite numerous reviews, recounts, lawsuits, not finding any of that. There's been a few instances of voter fraud, about 24 people charged with voter fraud out of 3.3 million people who voted. So that is a sliver of people that were charged with voter fraud.
And remember, but even the things that Trump raised in lawsuits weren't fraud. They were administrative issues about like an absentee ballot application being doubling for the envelope for your absentee ballot. That is not a fraud issue. That's an administrative issue. Clerks curing information on absentee ballot, that is not fraud. It's an administrative issue. Now, Trump claimed there's a vote dump in Milwaukee in the middle of the night. Wasn't his lawsuit. also isn't a vote dump. It's Milwaukee County is slow counting absentee ballots on Election Day. We've seen it election after election after election.
They're unique because they have the central count, yeah.
So what's the fraud? Did machines not count ballots correctly? Were people, I guess the one that comes close is the indefinitely confined voting, right, declaration that people may have declared that appropriately, but there's been no proof in court a single time when they've had opportunities to do so to show there was fraud there.
And what I was trying to get to, too, is that Democrats are kind of saying that Voss can't have it both ways. You can't say you're not going to decertify the election, but also say there's widespread voter fraud. So he's trying to appease to both base, because even Jefferson Davis, who's kind of apparently helping Gableman with his investigation, some consider him kind of a conspiracy theorist, tours around with Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. You know, he's saying that, you know, I liked what Voss said. This is the first time I heard Voss say he thinks there's widespread voter fraud. So they're thinking they're making progress here. And even talked to some sources who were at that meeting in Stevens Point saying they're flat out pissed. I'm not going to lie. They are upset that the speaker is not bringing this resolution, Representative Rantham's solution, to the floor. But I think a lot of people are just not realizing that there is no pathway, legal pathway, to do this. But he's just kind of leaving people at the edge of their seat, that saying that, hey, I do believe in some of the things you're saying.
Now, the nursing home stuff, it's troubling, the things that we saw, the videos we saw of people who don't look like they know what's really kind of going on,
correct,
who voted. However, under state law, only a judge can declare somebody incompetent to vote. There's a misconception among some Republicans that special voting deputies who normally go to a nursing home twice to help voting before they send the absentee ballots, which is what they suspended, right? They suspended that requirement, that a special voting deputy would have stopped that. They can't declare somebody incompetent and eligible to vote. That's not their role. So those things are, again, troubling and look bad, but was it illegal? There's no evidence of widespread fraud in nursing homes. Again, some troubling things. It breaks your heart to watch some of these folks and what may be going on. But where's the fraud, the proof that a employee cast a ballot for them? Where is it?
It's the big question mark.
Yeah.
You did talk about Trump. I do just want to bring up his statement, because shortly after Robin Voss made those statements saying he believes there's widespread voter fraud, Trump weighed in again. He said, Speaker Voss just said there was widespread fraud in the 2020 presidential election, but that the state legislature cannot do anything about it. Wrong. There is already a powerful resolution in the state assembly that calls for decertification. Voss knows that this should be done quickly and easily. Once again, former president really, really stressing Robin to do more. We know it's not going to happen, but the big question mark, too, is how much is this going to continue? Mm-hmm. How much is Trump going to have an influence in Wisconsin? And I think the still big question mark is, if he doesn't do what Voss says, is he going to still be friends with him? Is he going to still give endorsements here in Wisconsin? We got Clayfish, Nicholson, Rantham, all these others who are really vying for that support. And who knows?
And
we'll
Trump said,
we'll see.
If Republicans had more courage, we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. It's a little subtle dig that these guys aren't fighting hard enough for me. That's what it's
correct,
all about in the end, right? It's about what Trump wants. We saw Trump rip Republicans right ahead of the Republican convention last summer, right? They're trying to basically cover up the fraud. 2 months later, we saw Robin Voss on a plane with Donald Trump. He's been briefing Trump on what's been going on. It's never going to end, Emily. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be enough for Donald Trump unless you put him back in the White House.
Absolutely. Let's move on to another election-related news this week, is that there'll be no charges for Wisconsin's fake electors. Now, this was a group of Wisconsin Republicans who took it upon themselves to certify Donald Trump and that he won the battleground state of Wisconsin and that they didn't break any laws. So state officials basically said, it's okay. They did what they had to do, and that was a vote by state election officials, WEC, on Tuesday. Andrew Hitt was one of those electors that submitted that, and he had a quote that said, I had no illusions the actions we took as Republican electors were going to change the rightful result of the election, either in Wisconsin or nationally. We simply gathered on the advice of legal counsel to ensure all options were preserved in the case of a court decision favorable to the Trump legal team and ongoing litigation. So I guess it kind of closes out of those big question marks. Of course, Democrats were kind of saying, look what they did. They're at fault here, but it kind of was all
We still have the House Select Committee looking at stuff.
Yes.
We have a complaint with the state DOJ. We have a complaint with the Dane County DA. And we have a complaint filed with the Office of Lawyer Regulation against Andrew Hitt and Jim Troupas for their role in everything. I asked folks this week, what's this probably going to come to? The answer was probably not a whole lot. It's maybe more about harassing and making uncomfortable people who are involved in these things. Maybe the complaint with OLR will lead to some kind of like ethical thing, but I don't think there are going to be criminal charges out of this. But there is a national effort to target lawyers who are involved in these things and make them uncomfortable by what they did. Two, something to keep in mind, there's a parallel. So the Elections Commission, because Bob Spindell was one of the people who was these elector thing, they went to outside counsel, hired DOJ, state DOJ, basically to do it for them. This guy's opinion was that this is a parallel to what happened in Hawaii in 1960. Back then, Nixon emerged from Election Day with about 140 vote margin over Kennedy. There was a recount. The recount was still going on when two slates of electors met, one for Nixon, one for Kennedy, I think in public. They both cast their votes. They were then processed, and then it was after the recount was finished and they declared Kennedy the winner after the recount. A judge picked the Kennedy electors to go off to D.C. The difference here, though, is we'd already had the recount. It was upheld that Biden had won. We'd had round one of lawsuits had been filed and decided in favor of, not in favor of Trump, I guess I should say, and then they met. Well, the appeals were still open, and so the lawyers from DOJ's justification was these were still legal options on the table. They were exercising them, and there's evidence from these guys they were not trying to defraud anybody. They're trying to do this as part of a legal strategy.
Right. So. Very two different scenarios as well. Now, last a little nugget of election news I wanted to touch on this week is that Milwaukee is kind of offering a workaround to a court ruling that banned drop boxes across the state for the upcoming April election. So they said in a statement, we are going to offer staffed drop boxes for the April 5th general election. In a quote by Milwaukee's executive director, Claire Woodall-Vogue, from the Milwaukee Election Commission, she said, well, Wisconsin has shown a desire and demand for convenient voting options. The city of Milwaukee remains committed to making voting as easy and accessible as possible for our cities. So I think the question here, though, is this okay? Mm-hmm. I immediately kind of called the city of Madison and said, are you guys thinking of doing this? They kind of sent out their statement and didn't say they were going to do the same thing. So we both actually contacted Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, who has been suing in court to get rid of drop boxes. I guess I should say limit them to mm-hmm. only the one in local clerk's offices. So they haven't really made a decision. Mm-hmm. They're kind of looking into it. And that's what we've heard so far. But it depends if they can challenge this or not.
Well, it wasn't just whether the box was manned. It had to be basically in the clerk's office. So yeah. That's what I don't kind of understand. I'm not a lawyer. I say it many times on the show. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to try and venture to say what the law says. But I understand the ruling was from the Waukesha County judge was it had to be on the clerk's office property mm-hmm. or city property of some sort, but manned by a clerk, clerk staff. So how's this going to work if you have 20 boxes? I don't remember how Milwaukee has.
Yeah.
If they're around the city.
They have 15 total in the city.
How does that work?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm waiting for Will to see if they're going to go challenge this. We have mm-hmm. 3 weeks to the election, something like that. So there's still some time, but I'm actually deadly curious to know what
know.
They're going to do.
Yeah, and I followed up yesterday too, and they still just said, well, we could talk to you and let you know our feelings about it. But right now they're kind of holding off, so it remains to be seen. I did just want to put in a nugget before we get to stock picks, a little bit Milwaukee news too. The city is now one of two finalists for the Republican National Convention. So as everyone remembers, the sadness of what happened around 2020. It was mainly an all-virtual event because of the pandemic. So Milwaukee is really, really trying to prove that we have the hotels, we have the space. We were very close to making it happen here. So, mm-hmm. you know, take a serious look at us. The other finalist is Nashville.
Yep.
All right. And stock picks this week, you have rising Assembly Dem leadership changes because there's all changes,
okay.
JR.
So follow me. It's going to take a little while. So Gordon Hinds in December said, I'm stepping down as minority leader, right?
Mm-hmm.
Diane Hesselbein, not long after, said, I'm stepping down as assistant minority leader because I'm going to run for state senate. They replaced them with Greta Neubauer and Kaylin Haywood. Greta was on Joint Finance Committee. It opened a vacancy there. She pulled Beth Myers onto Joint Finance. Beth Myers was a leadership position. That opened up another position. So now Kaylin's position is open, Beth's position is open. They fill a caucus secretary. They fill those with Shelton Snodgrass. Now Mark Spreitzer, he's going to run for state senate. He's stepping away from his leadership position as caucus chair. Lisa Subek was elected this week from vice chair to chair, opens up her position. Now Suprema Moore is going to run for her spot. I've never seen this before, Emily, but from early December to late March, every single leadership spot the Assembly Democrats will turn over.
Yeah.
Now, if they're in the majority, it'd be a big deal.
Right.
In the minority, you're kind of trying to sell people on, we're going to try and get closer to where we are right now to the Republicans. There's not a viable path to majority. Even with the governor's map that the Supreme Court picked, with this environment, they're not getting back to majority. Maybe if you had this map plus a Dem wave, you may have an argument. But right now, you're not there. So it's going to be fascinating to watch kind of how this leadership team performs. And also, they reflect a generational change.
I was just going to say, we've brought up the age dynamic quite a bit on the show as well.
But it's
they bring a lot of new perspective.
A very young caucus, very progressive, very kind of Madison and Milwaukee-centric. They're almost all from like urban areas, except for like Steve Doyle out in Alaska. It reflects the caucus and where they're going right now.
Mm-hmm. And mix this week, Doug LaFollette, because he did make a big announcement. I think a lot of us knew what that announcement was going to be. He said he is going to run for re-election because he feels his office is under attack from Republicans, which we know some candidates have said they want to run because they want to have to make sure that office has more control over our elections, which, of course, right now is overseen by WEC.
Doug LaFollette has never raised a lot of money, never done a lot, like, in terms of advertising. He's had, however, the golden name in Wisconsin politics, LaFollette. I mean, that is like a brand. So even in bad years for Democrats, like 2010, 2014, he won re-election without too much of an effort. The question is, can a well-funded candidate in a good environment beat Doug LaFollette? I'm talking about Amy Loudenbeck. Now, there are other people who are running or thinking about running for Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. Amy is kind of viewed as the preferred candidate. She's won office before. She's been on Joint Finance Committee. She's going to raise money, all those kinds of good things. So let's say she gets through. Can she beat LaFollette? Because it might just be an environment year. It might just be that it's top of the ticket on down. If Republicans do well, they're going to win. If Democrats do well, they're going to win.
Right.
Can LaFollette rise above the fray? Now, LaFollette, the last several cycles, has not made a peep about anything. He actually has a decent argument to be made to voters for the first time in a while about why to keep him around, which is these Republicans want to put partisans in charge of your elections. I am the kind of dam against that movement. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to work. At least he's got an argument. He's not going to have money. He's not going to be up on TV, but he's got an argument and he's got a name. Is that enough? And it's probably a bad year for Democrats.
And he's very well known in the Madison area, but getting that, you know, if we're going to have a contentious Secretary of State's race, you know, it's getting your name out there across to other voters.
There hasn't been examination of Doug LaFollette's views on anything in years.
Right.
So if there's going to be a debate stage.
I think it's his first press conference in, I don't know, maybe a decade.
There's a debate stage with Amy Loudenbeck and Doug LaFollette. How's it going to go? You know, how would he perform? He hasn't been tested. I'm not saying he can't do it.
Right.
It's just you haven't been tested in years. How do you perform? If you haven't done that in a long time, it'd be fascinating to watch.
And he's a ripe age of 81. Mm-hmm. His office has also lost a lot of duties over the years, so it's kind of proving, you know, well, what are you going to do? and I think he's got a good platform right here with protecting our elections. Now, falling this week, you have Christopher Schmeling. He's the third district attorney to press charges after the Racine County Sheriff's investigation.
So Schmeling referred. So first he struck out with his own DA, Patricia Hansen in Racine County. She said, I don't have jurisdiction because these five commissioners live outside of Racine County. Then he struck out with the Milwaukee County DA, who said, there's no crime here, so the two commissioners in my jurisdiction, Mark Thompson and Jacobs, we're not going to press charges against them. Now we go to Green Lake County, which says, there's no crime here, we're not going to press charges against the commissioner who lives in our district. I was kind of watching this one a little bit because Evers appointed the DA, who's now in office there, but she had been an assistant DA for 13 years. So she's not like, I don't know if she's a partisan and whatnot, but she's a kind of a career prosecutor. And her conclusions were the same as Milwaukee County. No crime here. There are two more left, right? St. Croix County and Sheboygan County. What are they going to do? But in talking to people, I mean, again, not a lawyer, talked to a lot of them, They don't see the foundation for criminal charges against commissioners. And the pushback is you're trying to criminalize election behavior, election decisions, right? Administrative decisions made in a difficult environment. If you do that, what's the outcome going to be for the people in a servant public office going forward? Are they going to be afraid to make decisions because what might a prosecutor do to them? So, and you know, the other criticism is they don't get election law in Racine County Sheriff's Department. They're not experts on this. They're out of their element in trying to find criminal charges when it comes to election law. When the attorneys I talk to don't think there were violations of the law.
And I think my question now is, where do these allegations go, right, from here? We know Gableman's men made them as a big centerpiece of his investigation, often says he talks to the sheriff all the time about these allegations. I'm sure they teamed up to meet with these individuals who say, here's my father, here's my mother, who was too incompetent to cast a ballot. So, you know, after maybe no charges are filed, after all this is said and done, does it just be handover to Gableman to maybe look into and maybe find any more answers?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.